microwaved coffee. I'm drinking some beer.
Ooh. Oh. That sounds good. I'm drinking tea.
I'm drinking whiskey.
Ooh,
whiskey?
Are you having the Long Branch?
Mm-hmm. And I feel all right.
All right.
Yeah. Actually, I don't feel all right. My back. Like last year in October, when I started working out, I had like a back ache, like one of like my muscle in the back. I guess it like tightens up and it hurts like hell. And they gave me like a muscle relaxant, and it worked. I just took it once and like slept, and then the next day I was fine, but it came back for some reason, and I mean, they gave me a bunch of pills, so I'm going to take one tonight and just like knock out. But yeah, I don't know. The guy said like, well, the more you work out, like the better it'll probably get. So I was like, okay. And then, but yeah, I've been like working out pretty hard. I like added to it. So now I'm doing like almost an hour, and I'm like really sore everywhere.
Yeah.
I need to start. It's been so I couldn't go to the gym anymore. I just stopped.
You just stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, okay.
That bike thing, like, helped me out so much. I use it every day.
It's yeah. Awesome. Once we move out, I'm going to buy one of those things.
Yeah. They're great. I don't have to leave the house.
Oh, yeah. Wait. What kind of bike did you get?
I got a Cannondale.
Oh, nice.
Treadwell too. Actually, here, let me.
Oh, so you got a new bike.
Yeah, I got like a new bike.
All right. Road? Mountain?
It's like a hybrid.
Ooh, road and mountain.
Yeah, so it's supposed to be, a lot of stores when I was looking put them as like gravel or something like that, because you can go off-road, or it was expensive. But nice. I looked at Craigslist and OfferUp. A lot of the bikes they had there, like the cheaper ones, were like, I don't know, they just looked shady.
Yeah, like super
so I was
old,
just
rusted.
Like, and... I don't know. And then the ones that looked really good, like they were selling them for like thousands, like 2,000, 3,000. And so they're like the like fancy bikes. And I was like, if we're gonna move to the U.S., when I had a bike. I basically used the bike. Like when Vanessa met me, she was like, you walk everywhere. And I was like, yeah, that's just how I live. Like I walk everywhere. Cause that's how I grew up. Like LA is like that. Like San Diego is not that much like that. But in LA, like people just walk everywhere.
Yeah.
And I would ride my bike everywhere. And then when I moved out here, my mom bought me a bike and I just bike everywhere. So if people were like, let's go to, you know, the movies, I would ride my bike. Mm-hmm. And then if we move to, I'm just gonna be riding my bike all the time. I mean obviously unless we go somewhere super duper far, but
let's go to LA. Okay, I'm gonna ride my bike there.
Yeah.
So I wanted something comfortable with gears, and you know that was like a good quality, so that's why I spent a lot, and we had the bunny saved for a while, so let me
here that's good. Yeah, I kind of wanted to get a new bike, but then I ended up just getting a use one or whatnot, and I still need to get fitted for it, or I have to adjust everything for.
Yeah.
Cause like when I ride it, I have like a neck ache, so obviously I'm not.
Oh, it's not, something's not right.
Like either the handlebars are too far forward or back, or my seat's too low or high. So I'm gonna. I always feel a bike's worth investing in. I need to get my seat replaced on my bike.
This place was really cool. It was on Adams. It was called, Adams Avenue Bikes or something, bicycles. But it's by Polite Provision, like down the street from Polite Provision.
Oh, yeah. Across the street from that sushi and coffee place, right?
This was
and a little guitar shop.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think I went there once.
Yeah. And they were really cool. When I lived there. Super helpful. Nice. Like the guy was like super helpful, and then so they're gonna have it ready on Saturday, and I have to go test drive it or test ride it or whatever.
Nice, that's exciting.
Yeah, super excited.
Yeah, the one I have, I tried to replace the seat, but I can't get the old seat off. Really? Why did I say it?
Even with like WD-40 or something.
Yeah, it's not that it's rusted. It's just like the leverage that I need. Like, I guess I don't have the proper angle tool because like you can barely fit the tool in, and I don't know, because the bolts are like next to each other, so it's kind of a weird design or something. Yeah, so yeah. Plus, I need to adjust. Like, I don't know the proper ergonomics and stuff, like handlebar wise to seat to whatever.
Yeah.
I went to Novo Brewing yesterday and tried their vegan burger, and it is so good.
They have vegan burger?
Yeah, and now it's all I want every single day of my life.
Nice. So, it's yeah. So speaking about vegan, I'm full, like, I've been full on vegan.
No. Full on vegan.
Full on. Yeah, so nice. Yeah, now.
Try the burger.
Yeah, I'm going to try that burger.
And then I also had the vegan burger. I just realized it's a weekend of burgers. And then I had the vegan burger at Stone Brewery, which is also delicious.
Which
they have
better?
The they're both really good. The Impossible, they at Stone Brewery, they have it's like a spicy Impossible burger.
Yeah, I'm going to make it easier for you.
Yeah.
Both burgers were hanging off a cliff.
Yeah.
And you could only save one. Which one would it be?
You know what? I would take that's kind of hard. I guess I would take the Novo because it's more unique. The Stone Burger is really good, but the Novo burger, they have an avocado cream instead of mayonnaise. And then they have, it's a Beyond patty, and it has banana, quote unquote, bacon strips.
Okay.
So it's like really unique. So I would say that one, because the Stone one is really good, but I can make it at home.
It's just a burger.
Yeah, but the Stone one has like a really good sauce to it. I forgot what they put, but it's like a spicy sauce. And so that was really good.
Very cool.
All yeah. Right. So, and then they still have Wood Stout, which made me really happy.
Well, because probably people aren't buying them like crazy, so they probably still have it.
Like leftover.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. So, and then it's like outside, and it's like the best place to eat.
How was it? Yeah, I was going to ask you that actually. Cause...
Like super spread out.
Okay.
Like, if you guys want to go, we should.
Yeah,
go,
that's what I think we're gonna do. Because you suggested that last week for Vanessa's test, like how she wanted people to be there.
Yeah.
After she was done. So yeah, I think we'll do that. Like, you made a reservation, right?
I made a reservation. but they had a lot open for that day. I obviously not Sunday, but like Saturday. I only made it like a couple days in advance, but
yeah.
Yeah, it would be perfect. We could totally
go there. I'm gonna do that, and then nice. I just gotta get a head count of like who, but yeah, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm glad that worked out. Yeah, I was waiting to ask you.
Yeah, I felt really safe. Like I was like, we're super far away from other tables and other people, and yeah.
And you had good bike burger there. And good beer.
You get a burger and a beer.
Yeah.
I told myself I wouldn't go back to that place again, but
why?
Because that one time we went to Novo.
Oh, Novo. Yeah, Novo was bad. Like the first time we went when it wasn't when they didn't have the restaurant, right? We went when they just had the brewery. So
but that was my only bad experience there. Every time was good, but that night I was like, what are the chances all their beers taste like this?
Crap. Yeah.
Are you talking about, so do they have a restaurant in the corner now, like by where?
Yeah, at the mall.
Oh, okay, at the mall.
Uh-huh. So now they have one at the mall.
Oh, got it.
And it's a restaurant, and they've added a lot of food items. At first, they only had, like, chicken wings and, like, fries. Like, they only had, like, basics. They've added, like, a whole menu, and they've actually customized it so it's, like, American-Brazilian cuisine, which is really cool. So they have, like, traditional Brazilian like appetizers. I never know how to pronounce it, but I think they're called cojinas. They're like potato patties. Like, they have those, and they have like A lot of appetizers are burgers, and everything's like customized to be like Brazilian in one way or another.
Yeah. Well, remember we went that one time, or we tried to go, and then we just left because it was insane.
It was like packed, super packed. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and they have a garden outside.
I've gone twice, and like we couldn't go in. Like we couldn't order anything because it took so long. Like we just left twice.
Oh.
But I still haven't been there.
Yeah, and also at the before the quarantine, you had to go up and like get your food and your beer, which took a really long time because there was like a ton of lines and you didn't know where to go. But now because of quarantine, like they have waiters. So people, they just come out to your table so you don't have to like go up and order it. Yeah. But yeah, it was really good. But definitely we should go to Stone to celebrate for Vanessa because it's a really great
environment. Yeah, we'll do that instead because,
Mm-hmm. So anyways, this is Microwave Coffee Podcast and I'm Kajan Zendi.
And I'm Ivan Ortega.
And I'm Justin Park. Eat.
So, I tried to make this as short as possible because the subject is kind of a bummer. And it's not, I've been trying to stick to like quote unquote happier subjects because it's just what we need right now. So Netflix just came out with the documentary about the dark history of the Cecil Hotel, which I'm sure you guys heard about. The Cecil Hotel is located near Skid Row. So we're going to talk about Skid Row. Just a little bit about its history.
It is very depressing.
Very, very. Skid Row is located in downtown LA, and it's about 50 blocks in East Downtown Los Angeles, which I did not know was that big. I was like, that's crazy. I thought it was maybe like two blocks or something, like one street. Really large area. This is another thing that surprised me. Skid Row actually started in the late 1800s. So in 1876, the Transcontinental Railroad went through LA. And was actually the end point of the railroad from the country. So that was like the last stop you could get to.
Mm-hmm.
They added a station to accommodate all the travel. And the first station was built where the LA Historic Park is now. And in 1888, they added the arcade station located at 4th and Alameda. So because of the railway, thousands of men ended up riding the rails, so kind of like stowaways. So they would jump on the trains and then just ride it as long as they could, and LA would be the last stop. So they would get off in LA and they were like, I guess this is where I'm living, and that's it. Just like stay there. But in 1889, like almost immediately, they saw problems with this because the people that are normally riding the rails are probably homeless or running away from something.
Yeah.
So they all ended up in that area. In 1889, the LA Times wrote, Southern California is getting to be the mecca of the tramp of colder localities. There is something very tempting for those in a climate where the sun furnishes about as much fuel as needed for comfortable warmth, and where great orange orchards are convenient to ease their hunger. So that was another reason it wasn't going the other way around, where people were going to New York, is because of our climate. It made a more comfortable living if you were homeless, because we have sunny weather year round.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Another reason is that, well, LA, downtown LA actually quickly accommodated towards these men. They built stuff really quickly. There was brothels, cheap hotels, saloons that kind of like popped up out of nowhere.
Essentials,
definitely. Booze, sex. Yeah, that's all I need. And but of course it went downhill quickly because there was an overwhelming amount of people coming to LA. And there was no sign of it slowing down. Hollywood was established in 1887. And by 1912, the city had become a movie mecca, bringing in a lot more residents and workers. So now not only did you have homeless people coming in, but you had people who were coming to look for jobs. Just as a side note, I thought this was like very amazing. One of the founders of Hollywood, Harvey Wilcox, he wanted to make Hollywood. His goal was that Hollywood, he envisioned a community based on his sober religious principles. that man is like spinning in his grave right now. He was like a super religious prohibitionist, and so he wanted to make this town that was like sober and pure, and that didn't happen at all. It was like the complete opposite. So it did actually look like it was starting to get better. There was tons of film studios that were popping up everywhere, and there was hope that it would help the economy, because all of a sudden there was just this like influx of new jobs. There were new hotels and restaurants being built along with low-income housing. One of those low-income housing was the Cecil Hotel. Mm-hmm. And low-income housing wasn't just built for the homeless. It was also built for seasonal workers, because there was a lot of people coming out here for movies. And then once the movie was done, they would just leave. And they only wanted to stay here for like a little bit. So the thing about the low-income housing at the time was that they didn't half-ass it. They were like really nice buildings. So yeah, they built them to blend in with everything else. So you wouldn't be able to tell when you went by there that it was low-income housing.
Yeah, one of my favorite things, like when I was a kid, like that architecture, like that, God, I'm freaking blanking out right now.
Yeah, like the Art Deco.
Art Deco, yeah, that's like my favorite type of architecture. And yeah, I spent a lot of time in downtown because my mom was a seamstress, so we'd go to buy material a lot, and I would just like stare at it. So I would lie in the back seat of the car and just like look at the buildings pass by.
Yeah,
that's like my favorite.
They're beautiful. Like some of these buildings are just gorgeous. And one thing that they brought up at the in the Cecil Hotel documentary was that it's been really hard to let go of it, because they were like, it's a historic building. And actually, if you talk to the guests, people that have stayed at the Cecil, they'll actually say how deceiving it is, because you walk into the lobby and the lobby's like gorgeous to this day. It's still like stunning. But then you get in the elevator and then you go to any of the floors and it's like horrendous. It's like run down, really badly beat up rooms, like they haven't been updated. So but that is one of the things that they're kind of holding on to, is that it is a historic building and it's gorgeous. Things were looking up until, unfortunately, the Depression hit. A lot of the film production stopped and tons of people were left unemployed. So that is when downtown LA really became a homeless hub, or that's how it like kind of started out. That's when it got really bad. The only empathy that was shown towards homeless people at the time were from churches and charities who would try to provide shelter and food. But as we know now, there was just an overwhelming amount of people. Like, they just couldn't help everybody. One of those organizations was the Salvation Army. So they opened their headquarters on Skid Row. They built a boarding house, and they were hoping that with the boarding house that they could give shelter to the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, people were like really cruel to they still are. But people are really cruel to homeless people and just attacked it quickly. Somebody said, quote, "It is headquarters for an army of hobos and bums who infest the neighborhood during business hours." And so even people that were trying to help, like churches and charities, got attacked because they were like, we don't want you to do this for them. So they basically thought it was just bringing a bad image to the city and affecting the businesses. By the 1930s, Skid Row had over 10,000 homeless people. This is an excerpt from a New York Times article that was written on March 26th of 1939. It was titled Skid Row Serenade. I changed some of the language because it's like super racist back then. So this writer put, quote, "Jews, Greeks, and Italians in the doorways of pawn shops and secondhand clothing stores vie with one another to lure the unwary passerby inside. A fat German runs a beer parlor, and across the street, a dapper Frenchman ladles up 5-cent bowls of split pea soup. A large blonde woman named Sunshine manages one of the cleaner rooming houses. A few Chinese practically monopolize a hand laundry business, and Japanese with the cheapest cafes and flop houses. American Indians barter for forbidden whiskey. Chattering Mexicans loiter the steps leading up to the second floor hotel, while dapper black men, better dressed than any other vagabonds, wander by in riotous groups. This wasn't just happening in Los Angeles. There was other cities, mostly New York was the other big one, because it was also the other end of the railroad. So it's because of railroads that kind of brought these people to these major cities. There were other cities that experienced it, but it wasn't as bad in places like the Midwest or anything like that. One journalist wrote, with the exception of the Barbary Coast in San Francisco, LA is one of the toughest hangouts in the West. So even back then in the 30s, they just knew it was a really big problem, or going to be a really tough problem. In June of 1947, the LAPD chief Clements B. Horrell ordered a raid of Skid Row. They arrested over 350 people. The LAPD claimed that 50% of crimes that happened in LA were from the Skid Row area. And after the raid, the police had proudly claimed that there had been no robberies in the week following the raids. And Angelenos were like, bruh, it's been a week. Like, yeah. Calm down. You can't, like, make that assessment from a week. And, of course, the police chief was wrong, because it only lasted about a week. It continued to go up after that. The LAPD could do all the raids they wanted, but they were missing a big problem of the solution, which is drug abuse and mental illness. You can't, like, yeah. It's not just homelessness. It's all these other issues that you have to deal with that they're not equipped to deal with. Mm-hmm. So the LAPD would just throw people in jail. And of course, because they didn't really commit any crimes, would just be eventually released, and it does nothing. So those rates were not going down at all. Not only was the LAPD not helping, as I mentioned before, the community wasn't doing much either. They weren't really showing much empathy towards the homeless. One LA Times article referred to the homeless as scum of the gutters, dirty crows, and two-legged hogs. In 1956, the city was like, okay, we're finally going to do something about it. They tried to rehabilitate it. And they said, we're going to clear old buildings and kind of like clean up the streets. So there was two options. One was to demolish a problem building, so in a building that was run down. And your second option was to fix it up. Mm-hmm. So here's the problem. The problem is that the city said that it is the building owner's responsibility to do this. And so a lot of owners were like, well, it's going to cost me so much more to bring this up to code, so I'd rather just demolish it. They did just that. And this resulted in over half of Skid Row's buildings being demolished. And they went from 15,000 buildings for low-income housing to 7,000 over the next 10 years. Oh. And then they were shocked when homelessness skyrocketed because yeah. You kicked all these people out of their homes and now they're on the street. Yeah. And as if things couldn't get worse in
That's
the 60s.
That's going to happen this year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. As if things couldn't get worse in the 60s and 70s, there was an influx of homeless veterans who had returned from the Vietnam War. And this only added to the homeless population that had mental illness to kind of skyrocket, because these veterans were coming back with like PTSD, drug addictions. Mm-hmm. And so it just made it even worse. The Vietnam War also drastically changed the demographic. So up until the 1960s, the majority of the Skid Row residents were white and elderly, because they were these old men that had traveled there, like we said before, for either work or just because it was like the end of the road. But now, because of the Vietnam War, we started to see a shift in what we now have as a demographic. So the demographics haven't changed really since the 60s. A majority of the Skid Row residents are either Black or Hispanic. In 1987, Police Chief Daryl Gates, backed by Mayor Tom Bradley, stated that the LAPD had plans to once again clear the area, which they had tried to do before. Now they were having a lot tougher time, because now there's homeless advocates. So now they have people protesting, they have people fighting back against this. A few months later, after they had made that announcement, they said that they would resume raids. When they brought this up, Los Angeles City Attorney James K. Hahn said, that he would not prosecute people if the LAPD arrested them. He said, quote, I simply will not prosecute people for being poor, underprivileged, and unable to find a place to sleep. And then Daryl Gates, who was the LAPD, basically told him, he said, quote, as an elected city attorney of Los Angeles, Mr. Hahn has a responsibility to file a prosecuted case, which are presented to him by the LAPD. So basically he said, you don't have a fucking choice. Like, you work for us, and if we prosecute people, you have to do it. So fast forward to 2005, nothing much had changed. We made a really grisly discovery that hospitals and law enforcement were dumping patients on Skid Row. There were about 150 reported cases of patient dumping. The city attorney filed charges against Kaiser Permanente. They went after about 50 of those 150 reported cases, and Kaiser had a lot of them. But when the attorney tried to file charges against Kaiser, they quickly learned that there's no law saying that you can't do that. So to get around the lack of that law, the city attorney sued them for false imprisonment. Because they basically said, you're basically doing false imprisonment because you're taking people to where they don't want to go or where they did not ask to go. 2 years after that, in 2007, California State Senator Gil Cedillo sponsored a legislation against patient dumping. So the LAPD continued its efforts to enforce strict anti-camping policies. This is just one example, and we only know about this because there was a lawsuit in 2002. A Skid Row resident named Robert Lee Puri was cited twice for violating anti-camping ordinance. The LAPD confiscated his possessions, which included blankets, clothes, cooking utensils, and a hygiene kit. Which, that made me so mad. I was just like, it's just like, so just like more insult to injury. You know, that you're already like citing these people because they have nowhere to go, and then you're like taking away the only things that are keeping them alive.
Yeah.
And in 2006, the ACLU won a lawsuit that they filed on behalf of Mr. Puri, who was the guy who got his stuff confiscated. They also filed a suit on behalf of him and five other homeless individuals who had the same experience. The court ruled in favor of the ACLU and as the LAPD was in violation of Amendments 8 and 14, which guarantee due process and equal protection and prohibiting cruel and unusual punishment. So there was a compromise that was proposed by the ACLU for the LAPD, and they said, we'll come to a compromise. You cannot arrest people or take their possessions if they are sleeping on sidewalks between the hours of 9 and 6:30, because those are like quote-unquote sleeping hours. And you can permit, and we want you to permit sleeping on the sidewalk as long as it's within 10 feet, if it's not within 10 feet of a business or residence. And the LAPD straight up rejected it. They were like, no, absolutely not. So the ACLU continued to pressure the city of Los Angeles. As of today, the city can only confiscate items that are a threat to public safety and bulk items such as furniture and appliances. So they cannot take anything from you if it's not a danger to anybody else. So yeah, that's pretty much it. It's just this overwhelming problem that I just don't even know how you would even start to tackle it, because it's so large. And as I learned this week, it's been going on since the 1800s, which is crazy to me. I previously thought that it started with like the crack epidemic in like the 80s. I didn't think it was around that long. I did want to end on a happy note because it's such a bummer subject. So in the 1970s, a former nun named Catherine Morris and her husband Jeff Dietrich founded the Hippie Kitchen. They first started in the back of their van. They would distribute food to those in need on Skid Row. And I'm happy to report that over 4 years, or 40 years later, they are now 85 and 73. They have remained active, and you can still find the Hippie Kitchen. So it's still up. And you can volunteer there if you guys want more information on volunteering during COVID hours. There is the, you can go to lacatholicworker.org. And just a fun fact, one of their volunteers in 1998 was Meghan Merkel. She used to volunteer there a while back. So
Meghan Merkel.
Yeah, yeah. The princess or former princess or whatever she was. Yeah. Ex-princess.
Oh, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Whatever. Good for her. So yeah, thanks as always to Wikipedia, Curbed LA, Britannica.com, the Los Angeles Catholic Worker, and SkidRow.org.
Speaking of Meghan Merkel.
Yeah.
I listened to this podcast called Men in Blazers. It's a soccer soccer podcast. It's like two English guys. One of them became a U.S. citizen. But when she married the prince, they were saying, like, we finally infiltrated.
Yeah! Monarchy. Oh, my God. That's so funny. Yeah,
and then they freaking leave it.
Yeah, so and then they're like, bye. Yeah, I would have thought maybe she would have wanted to stay just for that reason, to just like stick it to them.
Yeah,
but yeah, speaking of royalty, Kyle is now technically has a title of lord.
Did he buy the land?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll send you guys the frame. I bought it for him for Valentine's Day, and he was like super surprised because we never celebrate Valentine's Day. So it was like an extra surprise. I was like, yeah, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. And, so for gotcha. Those that don't know, if you buy land, is in Scotland, right?
In Scotland, you can buy a square foot. You can buy more, but you buy minimum you a square foot.
Yeah. And that's legally, you are known as a lord.
Yep. Lord or lady.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can buy it online and when you
and
get
he's
there.
Like, he's like, you have to call me Lord now. And I was like, I absolutely will not do that. I'm like,
when
I'm
you said you bought it for him, I was like, what did you do?
Yeah, exactly. No, we're never gonna hear the end of this.
Yeah.
I'll attach a link in our podcast notes, but yeah, I was like, I can't with this guy. Like, what the fuck are you? Oh, and I planted a tree too. I was like, might as well make this worth it.
Yeah.
Anywho, so where can they find us?
Can find us at Microwave Coffee Podcast on Instagram and Microwave. This is the first time I mess up. Damn it!
Oh my!
Streak
goodness.
Over. I know. I quit.
Redo. Sorry, we'll cut this part out.
All right.
Okay.
Where can they find us?
You can find us at Microwave Coffee Podcast on Instagram and Microwave Coffee Podcast at Gmail.
.com.
Yay.
Woo. Thank you guys. Did it.
You never mess up that.
I know.
Jeez.
Oh.
All right. Thank you guys. We'll see you next week.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Could I get some more coffee?